Efforts to attend Christian gatherings. In some parts of the world, brothers negotiate congested, polluted highways or crowded subways to get to Christian meetings and conventions. But in Papua New Guinea, the problem is often the lack of good roads and transportation. Hence, many families have to travel at least some of the way on foot or by canoe or both. For example, publishers, along with their children, regularly walk more than 100 miles over slippery, sawtooth mountains to attend the annual district convention in Port Moresby. Their grueling, week-long trek follows the world-famous Kokoda Trail, site of many bitter World War II battles. They carry with them their food, cooking utensils, clothes, and other items needed for the convention. The brothers on isolated Nukumanu Atoll usually attend annual conventions in Rabaul, 500 miles to the west. To be certain of getting there on time, says Jim Davies, they sometimes leave 6 weeks ahead of time because of the unreliable boat service. The return trip can also be fraught with uncertainty. One time, the only boat traveling to Nukumanu detoured to Australia for repairs, and then the owners had financial problems. As a result, it took the brothers more than 6 months to get home. Granted, that was an extreme case, but delays of weeks are not unusual, forcing the stranded publishers to stay with fellow witnesses or relatives. The following is from pages 147 and 148 of the printed edition. Jehovah is our greatest teacher. John Tavoisa. Born 1964, baptized 1979. Profile. As a child, he was cruelly persecuted by his teachers and his fellow students and was forced to leave school after only 2 years. He now serves as a circuit overseer.
I was born in the village of Gave Gave in Milne Bay Province. My father started to study the Bible when I was 7 years old, and he taught me the things he was learning. At about that time, I began to attend a public school. When my two teachers, who were Anglicans, learned that I was associating with the witnesses, they began to persecute me. Fellow students did the same, even attacking me with sticks. As a result, I was forced to leave school after only 2 years. About a year later, I saw one of the teachers at the local market. "You are a clever boy who would have done very well at school," he said. "But because of your religion, you will end up being a servant to your fellow students." When I told my father what the teacher had said, his reply warmed my heart. "If the world will not educate you," he said, "Jehovah will." Father and a special pioneer brother helped me to gain the most valuable education of all, the knowledge that leads to everlasting life. My native tongue was Dewawa, but they taught me the Bible in Hiramotu, which became my second language, and in Tokpisin, which became my third. I was baptized at the age of 15. 2 years later, I started pioneering. In 1998, I was invited to attend the ministerial training school. At the time, I had a limited knowledge of English. So to prepare me for the school, the branch assigned me to an English language congregation in Port Moresby. Thus, English became my fourth language. At the graduation, I was assigned to the Ulotau congregation in Milne Bay Province. 6 months later, I was greatly surprised and thrilled to be appointed as a circuit overseer. My first circuit included New Britain, New Ireland, Manus Island, and other neighboring islands. I married my dear wife Judy in 2006, and we special pioneered for 1 year, after which we took up circuit work together. When I visit congregations, I often tell young ones, "Jehovah is our greatest teacher, so let him teach you, for he can equip you to be truly successful in life." That, to be sure, is an important lesson I have learned. Returning to the account.
The fine example of missionaries. Serving in a foreign land where the standard of living may be lower than it is at home can be quite an adjustment for missionaries. Yet, as many have demonstrated, it is an adjustment that can be made and that is often appreciated by the local people. One woman in Papua New Guinea said of the two missionary sisters studying with her, "Their skin is white, but their hearts are like our hearts." Some missionaries serve in the traveling work. In order to visit congregations, they may have to travel by whatever mode of transportation is available. This was true of Edgar Mangoma. The circuits he served took in the Fly River and Lake Murray. When serving the two congregations on the lake, I went by canoe, sometimes with and sometimes without a motor. In the latter case, it would take me up to 8 hours to get from one congregation to the other. Usually, three or four brothers accompanied me, knowing they had to paddle all the way back after dropping me off. How I appreciated them! The good example of missionaries, including their humility and love for people, has resulted in an excellent witness. The villagers were astonished to see me staying with interested ones in their homes and sharing meals with them, wrote a circuit overseer. In fact, some local people have said to me, "Your worship of God is genuine. Our pastors do not associate with us like you do." Do foreign sisters find it difficult to adjust to life in Papua New Guinea? "For the first few months, I found it very difficult," recalls Ruth Boland, who accompanied her husband David in the traveling work. "Many times I felt like giving up, but I am glad I didn't, for I came to appreciate and love the brothers and sisters. My husband and I thought less and less about ourselves and more about others. Indeed, the joy we began to experience was unsurpassed. Materially, we had nothing, but spiritually, we were rich. And we saw Jehovah's hand in so much that happened, not just in connection with the advancement of the good news, but also in our own lives. When you have nothing materially, that is when you truly rely on Jehovah and see His blessing." Civil War on Bougainville. In 1989 on Bougainville Island, the smoldering embers of a long-time secessionist movement finally ignited a full-scale civil war. During the 12-year conflict, some 60,000 people were displaced and 15,000 died. Among the displaced were many publishers, most of whom resettled in other parts of Papua New Guinea. Shortly before leaving the island, Dan Ernest, a pioneer, was seized by Bougainville Revolutionary Army, or BRA, soldiers and taken to a large warehouse. Dan recalls, "Inside was a BRA general wearing a uniform covered with medals and a sword at his side. 'Are you Dan Ernest?' he asked. 'Yes,' I replied. 'I heard you were a spy for the Papua New Guinea Defense Force,' he declared. I started to explain that Jehovah's Witnesses do not get involved with the conflicts of any country, but he interrupted and said, 'We know. We were watching. Other religions supported whoever seemed to be winning. Yours is the only religion that remained completely neutral.' Then he added, 'Our people have been in turmoil during this war and need your comforting message. We would like you to stay in Bougainville and continue preaching. But if you must leave, I will make sure all your belongings get out safe.' 2 weeks later, when my wife and I transferred to a new pioneer assignment on Manus Island, the general lived up to his word." The branch office worked hard to maintain contact with the publishers in the area affected by the war and, despite a naval blockade, was able to send them some food, medicine, and literature. A visiting circuit overseer reported, "The scars of war are everywhere, but the brothers and sisters are still busy preaching and holding their meetings. Many Bible studies are also being conducted." Finally, in 2001, the warring parties reached a peace agreement that established Bougainville and nearby islands as an autonomous region. Bougainville Island currently has no resident witnesses, but neighboring Buka Island has a fine congregation of 39 publishers. A volcano destroys Rabaul. The city of Rabaul has a large harbor that is actually the caldera of an ancient volcano. In September 1994, Active vents on opposite sides of the harbor erupted, devastating Rabaul and reshaping the way of life in the province. The kingdom hall and the attached missionary home were destroyed, but no brothers were killed. One brother, however, had a heart problem and died while fleeing the eruption. The brothers all went to prearranged areas miles away, following an evacuation plan that for some years had been posted on the information board at the kingdom hall. Immediately, the branch office took steps to assist those affected and to organize relief supplies. Donated clothing, mosquito nets, medicine, gasoline, diesel fuel, and other items were dispatched, along with rice and taro from a nearby congregation. Indeed, the relief operation went so well that local officials and others made a number of favorable comments. Eventually, the Rabaul congregation ceased to exist. 2 days after the eruptions, about 70 publishers and their children gathered at an abandoned vocational school. When the elders arrived, the publishers asked, "What time does the book study start?" Yes, despite the hardships, meeting attendance and the witnessing work were never neglected. Most of the brothers moved to nearby groups, one of which became a congregation as a result. The provincial government promised all the religions that had lost property that they would be granted land in the town of Kokopo, about 15 miles from Rabaul. However, while other religions received land, the witnesses did not. Then, about 7 years after the eruption, a brother from Africa began to work for the town planning department. Noting the unfair treatment the witnesses had been given, he promptly located a suitable parcel of land in Kokopo and assisted the brothers with the application, which was approved. A volunteer construction team helped build a kingdom hall and missionary home. In fact, the initial injustice actually proved to be a blessing. How so? The land earlier granted to the churches is up a steep hill, but the property given to the brothers is ideally located in the center of town.